This week on Public Address Science, the science behind the three most important words in the English language.
Ik hou van u.
I love you.
It doesn't matter where you live in the world or what language you speak. That is the message that everyone wants to hear. Love is one of the most powerful emotions in human experience. But from a scientific perspective, why is love so important, and can we make any scientific predictions about its eventual outcome? To answer these questions, I visited Professor Garth Fletcher, a research psychologist at the University of Canterbury, and I began the interview by describing his intimate relations laboratory.
It's basically a room that's wired up so that Prof Fletcher can observe people interacting. I can see one-way mirror on mm-hmm. one side of me and at least one camera. Am I missing?
Three.
There's three cameras here and presumably microphones hidden all around the place as well. Mm-hmm. When you have people in here interacting, how do you measure the way they're behaving, or how do you observe the way that you're behaving?
Well, they're good questions. So we're interested in behaviour, and we're interested in how people think, and we're interested in how people feel. And our aim is to try and understand how those three domains contribute and work together in terms of dyadic or couple interaction. So we do a lot of research where we bring people who are dating, we'll bring people who are married in some cases in here. And we might get them to do a variety of tasks. Frequently, we'll get them to have discussions with each other. And usually, we will have a video recording of their behaviour. We'll have close-ups of their faces. One of the things we've done in the past, in several studies, is develop a procedure where once people have had a 10-minute discussion, we take identical video copies of that, and then we separate up the couple. So we keep one person in this lab, we put the other one in the other lab, and of course, these labs are soundproof. And then we get them to review the tapes and get them to report what they were thinking and feeling. And provided you do it straight away, it seems like quite a powerful mnemonic, and it's surprising what people can remember.
One of the things that you have studied, which I find quite fascinating, is the role that evolutionary selection plays in partner choice in terms of attractiveness. And I guess we're all kind of familiar with this from the animal kingdom, where the parrot with the brightest feathers, or the lion with the biggest mane attracts a partner. And of course, this also happens in human relationships.
Well, yes, indeed. There is the equivalent of the lion's mane and the feathers on the bird and the redness of the band on the woodpecker's leg in humans. And in terms of humans, we have a pretty good handle, actually, on what people are looking for. And basically, I always think they come down to the big three. And the first of the big three, and this is numero uno, and you find this across cultures, is people are looking for a partner who's kind and trustworthy and warm and loyal. Now, I mean, it's obvious, but nevertheless, you still have to do the research. You still have to find, okay, that may be a stereotype, that may be a first guess, but is it true? Well, the general answer is it is true. And that's true for both men and women. The next one down the list, which is not quite as important, but pretty important, is attractiveness and being healthy. Being attractive, being fit, these kinds of factors. And again, you see this around the world. But we do find a characteristic gender difference there, and that is that, which is very much in accordance with the stereotype, which is that for men, attractiveness is more important than for women. The third one is finding someone who has status and resources, or has the potential, ambitiousness and so forth, to get resources and to attain status. Okay. And here you find this a sex difference, but it's in exactly the opposite way. And here, women rated as more important than men. So it's the mirror image of attractiveness.
Well, that's an interesting question. Which is the more shallow sex in that case, whether it's better to look for attractiveness or affluence?
The question is why, and evolutionary psychology really, I think, has the most plausible and parsimonious explanation for this pattern. And it's all to do with something called parental investment. Humans are a bonding species. We live together over many long years. We both men and women help raise the children. Only about 3% of mammals are like this, actually bond. In every single one of them, the male will help to raise the offspring by guarding the nest or bringing food or helping out in some fashion to support the mate and help raise the young. But even in humans, it's still a little asymmetrical because the female still invests somewhat more. The male can use that strategy of trying to impregnate as many females as possible, for the female, that strategy is closed off because the woman is only capable of producing so many children. Plus, the energy requirements of pregnancy and so forth are greater. So the woman normally invests somewhat more to a greater degree than the male does and the man does. Therefore, you would expect women to be perhaps a little choosier, but also to be focused on slightly different things than the male. The main carrier of good genes is probably attractiveness. The male is particularly interested in that feature. The woman is a bit more interested in those features of the partner that are going to help her to provide for the children and help to provide for her and help to raise the family.
Right.
So the female will be more interested in status and resources, things that will contribute to the raising of the family.
When you talked about the main drivers that people are looking at in terms of partner selection, mm-hmm. and in some cases looking for a warm, kind person and a successful person mm-hmm. might not necessarily be compatible. They might be contradictory.
Right.
How do people make a trade-off between those mm-hmm. different, mm-hmm. The three sort of main different aims? Or do people do that?
Well, that's a very good question. And we've actually studied this in part, and as have other people. And we published a study 1 or 2 years ago where we looked at specifically at the kind of trade-offs that men and women will make. And what we found, interestingly, was that there were gender differences. So that, for example, a woman will be quite likely to trade off someone who has got high status and resources against not looking that great.
Thank goodness for that.
Right. Men are more likely to trade off the other way around. They're more likely to trade off someone who's, if they haven't got very much in the way of status and resources, that's okay as long as they've got something else to bring to the table, and oftentimes that's being pretty attractive. People will even trade off to some extent on how intimate and loyal and kind a person is, although in a long-term relationship, the way people will see that is probably as a necessity rather than a luxury.
Turning to the application of evolutionary theories, is there a way to apply it to relationships to help people solve their relationship problems or identify where their relationships might be going wrong?
Many years of research have shown us what the predictors of relationship success are in Western cultures. Two main predictors are communication and interaction. And the second biggest predictor is really people's attitudes to each other and their attitudes to the relationship.
Okay.
But basically, if we get couples in here and look at their behaviour, we can probably predict what's going to happen down the track. About 90%, 80 to 90% of the time, we'll know whether they'll be together.
Right,
in another,
wow.
3 years, 5 years, 10 years. It's not perfect, but it's not bad.
Extremely good.
We know how to do that. It's not that difficult to do, actually, if you know what you're doing.
I guess I have to ask, is that an alarming piece of self-knowledge to have in terms of your own relationships?
Well, it's an interesting question. I don't know that I'll answer it directly, but intimate relationships and sexual relationships contain some of the most powerful emotions that we know of. Grief, love, sexual jealousy. And I've experienced all three, as many people have. One of the main things those experiences taught me as a scientist was that these emotions have very powerful motivating properties. They need to be taken very seriously. They're worth scientific investigation. When you understand something pretty well from a scientific angle, it doesn't do anything to prevent the emotions or cognitions or normal behaviours occurring, and you have completely normal relationships which occur in precisely the same way as everybody else's does.
Right.
Which is very fortunate.
Okay.
Next week on Public Address Science, the equally emotion-provoking subject of biofuels.